"It's been like that for a while now," said Mrs. Weasley, in an unconvincingly casual voice. "Ever since you-know-who came back into the open. I suppose everybody's in mortal danger now. I don't think it can be just our family, but I don't know anyone else who's got a clock like this, so I can't check. Oh!" With a sudden exclamation, she pointed at the clock's face. Mr. Weasley's hand had switched to travelling. "He's coming." And sure enough, a moment later there was a knock on the back door. Mrs. Weasley jumped up and hurried to it. With one hand on the doorknob and her face pressed against the wood, she called softly,
"Arthur, is that you?"
"Yes," came Mr. Weasley's weary voice. "But I would say that even if I were a Death Eater, dear. Ask the question."
"Oh, honestly."
"Molly?"
"All right, all right.
What is your dearest ambition?" "To find out how airplanes stay up." Mrs. Weasley nodded and turned the doorknob, but apparently Mr. Weasley was holding tight to it on the other side because the door remained firmly shut. "Molly, I've got to ask you your question first."
"Arthur, really, this is just silly."
"What do you like me to call you when we're alone together?" Even by the dim light of the lantern, Harry could tell that Mrs. Weasley had turned bright red. He himself felt suddenly warm around the ears and neck, and hastily gulped soup, clattering his spoon as loudly as he could against the bowl.
"Molly Wobbles," whispered a mortified Mrs. Weasley into the crack at the edge of the door.
"Correct," said Mr. Weasley. "Now you can let me in." Mrs. Weasley opened the door to reveal her husband, a thin, balding, red-haired wizard wearing horn-rimmed spectacles and a long and dusty travelling cloak.
"I still don't see why we have to go through that every time you come home," said Mrs. Weasley, still pink in the face as she helped her husband out of his cloak. "I mean, a Death Eater might have forced the answer out of you before impersonating you."
"I know, dear, but it's ministry procedure and I have to set an example. Something smells good. Onion soup?" Mr. Weasley turned hopefully in the direction of the table. "Harry, we didn't expect you until morning." They shook hands, and Mr. Weasley dropped into the chair beside Harry as Mrs. Weasley set a bowl of soup in front of him, too. "Thanks, Molly. It's been a tough night. Some idiots started selling Metamorph medals. Just sling them around your neck and you'll be able to change your appearance at will. 100,000 disguises, all for 10 galleons.
And what really happens when you put them on?"
"Mostly you just turn a fairly unpleasant orange colour, but a couple of people have also sprouted tentacle-like warts all over their bodies, as if St. Mungo's didn't have enough to do already."
"It sounds like the sort of thing Fred and George would find funny," said Mrs. Weasley hesitantly.
"Are you sure?" "Of course I am," said Mr. Weasley. "The boys wouldn't do anything like that now, not when people are desperate for protection."
"So is that why you're late? Metamorph medals?"
"No, we got wind of a nasty backfiring jinx down in Elephant and Castle, but luckily the magical law enforcement squad had sorted it out by the time we got there."
Harry stifled a yawn behind his hand. "Bed," said an undeceived Mrs. Weasley at once. "I've got Fred and George's room all ready for you. You'll have it to yourself."
"Why? Where are they?"
"Oh, they're in Diagon Alley, sleeping in the little flat over their joke shop as they're so busy," said Mrs. Weasley. "I must say I didn't approve at first, but they do seem to have a bit of a flair for business. Come on, dear, your trunk's already up there."
"Night, Mr. Weasley,"
said Harry, pushing back his chair. Crookshanks leapt lightly from his lap and slunk out of the room.
"Good night, Harry," said Mr. Weasley.
Harry saw Mrs. Weasley glance at the clock in the washing basket as they left the kitchen. All the hands were once again at mortal peril. Fred and George's bedroom was on the second floor. Mrs. Weasley pointed her wand at a lamp on the bedside table, and it ignited at once, bathing the room in a pleasant golden glow. Though a large vase of flowers had been placed on a desk in front of the small window, their perfume could not disguise the lingering smell of what Harry thought was gunpowder. A considerable amount of floor space was devoted to a vast number of unmarked sealed cardboard boxes, amongst which stood Harry's school trunk. The room looked as though it was being used as a temporary warehouse. Hedwig hooted happily at Harry from her perch on top of a large wardrobe, then took off through the window. Harry knew she had been waiting to see him before going hunting. Harry bade Mrs. Weasley good night, put on pajamas, and got into one of the beds. There was something hard inside the pillowcase. He groped inside it and pulled out a sticky purple and orange sweet, which he recognized as a puking pastille. Smiling to himself, he rolled over and was instantly asleep. Seconds later, or so it seemed to Harry, he was awakened by what sounded like cannon fire as the door burst open. Sitting bolt upright, he heard the rasp of the curtains being pulled back. The dazzling sunlight seemed to poke him hard in both eyes. Shielding them with one hand, he groped hopelessly for his glasses with the other.
"What's going on?"
"We didn't know you were here already,"
said a loud and excited voice, and he received a sharp blow to the top of the head.
"Ron, don't hit him,"
said a girl's voice reproachfully. Harry's hand found his glasses, and he shoved them on, though the light was so bright he could hardly see anyway. A long, looming shadow quivered in front of him for a moment. He blinked, and Ron Weasley came into focus, grinning down at him.
"All right."
"Never been better,"
said Harry, rubbing the top of his head and slumping back onto his pillows.
"You?"
"Not bad,"
said Ron, pulling over a cardboard box and sitting on it.
"When did you get here? Mum's only just told us."
"About 1 o'clock this morning."
"Were the Muggles all right? Did they treat you okay?"
"Same as usual," said Harry, as Hermione perched herself on the edge of his bed. "They didn't talk to me much, but I like it better that way."
"How are you, Hermione?"
"Oh, I'm fine,"
said Hermione, who was scrutinizing Harry as though he was sickening for something. He thought he knew what was behind this, and as he had no wish to discuss Sirius's death or any other miserable subject at the moment, he said,
"What's the time? Have I missed breakfast?"
"Don't worry about that. Mum's bringing you up a tray."
"She reckons you look underfed,"
said Ron, rolling his eyes.
"So what's been going on?"
"Nothing much. I've just been stuck at my aunt and uncle's, haven't I?"
"Come off it,"
said Ron.
"You've been off with Dumbledore."
"It wasn't that exciting. He just wanted me to help him persuade this old teacher to come out of retirement. His name's Horace Slughorn."
"Oh,"
said Ron, looking disappointed.
"We thought..."
Hermione flashed a warning look at Ron, and Ron changed tack at top speed.
"We thought it'd be something like that."
"You did?" said Harry, amused.
"Yeah, yeah. Now Umbridge has left, obviously we need a new defense against the Dark Arts teacher, don't we? So, what's he like?"
"He looks a bit like a walrus, and he used to be head of Slytherin," said Harry. "Something wrong, Hermione?" She was watching him as though expecting strange symptoms to manifest themselves at any moment. She rearranged her features hastily in an unconvincing smile.
"No, of course not. So, did Slughorn seem like he'll be a good teacher?"
"Dunno," said Harry. "He can't be worse than Umbridge, can he?"